Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod, the podcast that covers everything you want to know and need to know about rallying and is brought to you by Dirtfish.com. I am Lisa O'Sullivan, and joining me today, we have the aces in the pack from Dirtfish.com. We have former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Lisa. Very excited about Swedish Rally, as always.
I know, always giddy for it, giddy for it.
Yes.
And we have Mr. James Bowen, who is, well, it's your first Rally Sweden podcast with Dirtfish.com. Joined Dirtfish family just before Christmas. I feel you must be nicely settled in now, James.
Just about, Lisa, just about. Yeah, first Rally Sweden pod and first Rally Sweden in person. I'm mid-packing my bag to fly out to Umeå very soon. So, yeah, excited for this one.
Yeah, and Umeå is where we're going. This is the second round of the World Rally Championship 2024, as is the tradition. We've got the WRC2 and the juniors in action as well. The 71st running of Rally Sweden, 300.1 competitive kilometres over 18 special stages. And it's the third year being based in Umeå after all that time on the runway at Karlstad. James, we're kind of getting the feel of being at home in this new rally base, much closer to the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, I think so, Lisa. You know, as you said, Karlstad was the home of Rally Sweden for most of those 70-odd years. That's kind of where the heart of the rally was. But the most important thing on the only winter round, the only full winter round in the WRC, is that we can guarantee snow and ice. And that's what you get when you go north to Umeå. So it's starting to feel like home. It's a small town, but it's one that embraces the rally, and they've got a lot of sort of fan friendly stuff going on up there. Stages are quick, as you'd expect on Rally Sweden. So yeah, I think it's starting to feel like home for this event.
It has always been quite an innovative event, Rally Sweden, and I've only been once. I felt very welcome. I enjoyed the food. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I very much enjoyed the cold, even though I think when I went there, it was my hair froze when I stepped outside, which was the first time that's happened to me. I'm going to move on to the weather because, George, we've got to do the weather first. I mean, it is so key to this event, and it is exciting for those of us that don't get to spend time on the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, well, I've been tracking the weather in Umeå for about a month now, and they've had wild swings. We've seen down to minus 34, 35. I've seen, this is forecast, and I've got a weather station nearby that tells me what the weather's going to do as well. So this weekend it's been lovely and cold. This morning it is minus 21 in Umeå. the warmest it's going to get to is 12. However, through the week, it gets gradually warmer.
Let's clarify that.
Oh,
George,
yes, minus
Celsius
21.
Here as well,
Celsius.
The Americans,
Celsius, Celsius, yeah. Whatever that is. Extremely cold in Fahrenheit as well. Minus 21 is dashed chilly. Freeze your hair chilly, I suspect, Lisa. So through the week, it does get a bit warmer. It always stays below freezing. But tomorrow we might see a few sprinkles of snow around, and that increases on Wednesday and on Thursday and on Friday. So through the week we are getting 2.5 millimetres on Wednesday, 5.4 millimetres on Thursday. That equates to around about, you know, for the American audience, 3, 4, maybe 5 inches of snow. Very significant enough to affect rally cars on the stages. Road cleaning becomes a factor. but it has been lovely and cold up in Umeå, and they have had periods when the temperature's gone above freezing. And what does that mean for the rally now, the fact that it's been doing that? Well, hopefully it means that that it's been wet and then frozen. And that gives us that gives the road a very strong ice base. If, for instance, you get a year where the snow comes, it gets cold, the snow comes, and it never melts, it means that snow is always soft, generally speaking, in the forest roads, and you get incredible ruts, and you actually get down to the gravel. Not that it makes it any less spectacular. In many ways, it becomes like a charity race with wheels and ruts. It's almost like running a train, very odd to drive in, and I have that experience. So I'm hoping that what we've got here is just the ultimate in condition. We've got a good chance it is. On Saturday and Sunday of the rally, it clears up to be gorgeous sunshine, forecast. Don't shoot the forecaster, don't shoot the messenger. Saturday and Sunday, gorgeous sunshine, and just minus 10 overnight, minus 8 overnight, and minus 2 during the day. So not really going to freeze your hair on those days. So the weather looks spectacular, I think, for the rally. It's a big variable. It is going to affect the first day at least, and there's 100-odd kilometres on the first day. That's going to make a difference on that first lap, 50-60 k's of extreme road cleaning. Of course, that snow may come through the day, and when I look at the forecast, as much as my forecast can do, it does suggest that it's snowing all day, but getting worse in the afternoon. So that's 5 days out. So the accuracy of these forecasts, you might consider it daily, but whether you would consider it hourly, I think that'd be very optimistic. But the suggestion is it gets heavy in the afternoon, which may mean that the road cleaning could affect the afternoon. And in fact, I mean, that's a strategic factor that could happen. So the road cleaning could be a factor throughout the day for the leading cars, much worse for car number one on the road than anyone else. So that's an interesting factor. And
what about the light levels, George? Sorry,
that's okay.
The light levels as well in the snow must make it. Well, I mean, obviously, if it's heavy snow and it's white out, then it's cooling conditions, isn't it?
It doesn't really slow the rally cars down so much because we're on pace notes and we look past it. But anybody that's driven in driving snow will know. There's been 5.4 millimetres of rainfall. It's quite a significant amount of snow, but not massive. It's not a massive snowstorm. And the way it's coming, the way it's forecast to come, is it seems to be a little bit over the whole day. Just continuous. So not like a big dump, which can be very hard to drive in. The visual flow field when it's snowing and driving snow across a road is absolutely horrendous. It's the worst thing in the world to drive in. My worst experience in a rally of that was on REC rally in Kielder, where on no pace notes, where it's very, very difficult to read the road anyway, and in driving snow. And I was leading the class at the time, and the option to make a mistake was massive, and you were tied between what pace you felt was safe and what you needed to do, as usual with all, well, unusually. Normally you're just flat out in a rally. That was a little bit of strategy, which was new to me at that point in my career. And we had to try and slow down and survive. So yeah, driving in the snow is difficult, but on pace notes for these guys, not a problem. Any stages at night with the lights are fantastic in the snow. Obviously, the white reflects everything, amplifies the light penetration. So no issues there at all. It should just be. I mean, weather-wise, it's looking fantastically interesting if that all holds good. The good news is it's always staying below freezing, so we're not talking about getting horrible wet feet. You're just talking about getting frostbite and damn chilly. So.
So George,
I remember trying to leave Park City in the States to get to Wyoming. I was on a skiing holiday and there was a whiteout. Fortunately, there's some golden arches that we could pull into and kill the time until we could actually see. But yeah, it's good to hear we're not going to have those kind of conditions. Sorry, James, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, just to say, George, last year we had some tyre issues because of those ruts and because of the cars hitting the gravel on the second passes of the stages. So is that Is that less likely to be a factor this year then, with that solid ice?
Yeah, last year it was a bit warm. It went above freezing. So we shouldn't be seeing those issues this year at all. The only question would be is, and not having spoken to anybody local, what sort of broadcaster am I? Hopeless not doing my homework like this. But I do not know anybody up in Umeå at all to phone and find out what the conditions would be. For Sweden down in Karlstad, I used to phone Bror Danielsson or actually Pernilla Solberg's father, one of the Walfredsons. I used to phone him and he would give me all the road conditions. It was lovely. But for Umeå, I don't have anybody.
At Dirtfish Rally, if you can help George out.
Yeah, absolutely. Get on to me. Become my best friend. And we'll once a year, we'll have terribly lengthy discussions about the road surface and the depth of the ice, etc. So no, anyway, look, I think it's going to be it looks to me like classic conditions for a great rally. Tremendous.
That is exactly what we're looking forward to, James. Should we take a look at the runners and the riders?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. So headline really is that Kalyrov and Pera is back. Mr. Part-timer. He's in for Sebastian Ogier at Toyota. So Ogier goes back to the sidelines and Kali joins that three-car team with Elvin Evans and Takamoto Katsuta, who of course are the full season pairing. We've also got a fourth Toyota in the house, which is Lorenzo Bertelli as a Toyota customer. So the Rally 1 field actually grows to 9 cars for this event. Hyundai, of course, their full season driver lineup is Thierry Neuville and Oit Tanak. But Esa-Pekka Lappi is back after he sat out Monte Carlo. Andreas Mikkelsen was in the third car for that event. But EP's back for Sweden. Looking forward to seeing how he gets on a surface that's one of his favourites. And then, of course, you've got the M Sport crew with Formo and Munster who are there for the full season. So, yeah, 9 cars. Should be a good show in Rally 1. But really, Rally 2 is a massive entry.
Was Lorenzo Bertelli in Monte Carlo?
No,
he wasn't. Lorenzo Bertelli, it's always about the livery, isn't it, really, we like to discuss.
Well, Lorenzo did go quite well last year. It surprised me. He went much better and in very, very difficult conditions, as James has pointed out. So this year, it's better. It's always been one of his favourite events. And whilst Lorenzo Bertelli is not the fastest driver in you know, WRC2 class when he's there, he's very respectful and you know he obviously ran the Ford World Rally Car for quite a time, and again very respectful performances and in Sweden last year he exceeded my expectations by quite a considerable amount, both in the fact that I thought that car might be quite difficult to drive because it's set up for the very top professional drivers who will accept a very difficult car to drive in order to get the most out of the traction. Not necessarily the easiest car for someone to jump into and drive. But the team's obviously very smart and they've given them a setup. I mean, I'm surprised they even had a setup available that would be nice for a customer to drive, but they quite clearly did a brilliant job. And he drove really, really well. So I would expect a decent performance for him. But when we say decent, it's ahead of the WRC2 cars, certainly, but I wouldn't necessarily say ahead of either of the Ford drivers. And talking to the Ford drivers, for me, Adrian Formo, okay, he's obviously under a regime of steadiness this year to keep bringing the results in. But I think back to the likes of Didi Auriol, a Frenchman, first time he went to Sweden, very quick on tarmac, you know, a top guy, went to Sweden and was instantly phenomenally quick. I think he was actually leading when he broke his sump on a rock, and an unusual to do that in Sweden, because you run lightweight sump guards because you don't need any more. And he managed to find a rock, punctured the sump, and then had to retire.
So this will be Formo's second start, I think, George, because I think he got experience here in 22. So he does know the roads
a
little bit.
He knows the
place. What you've got to remember is he's in the car that won the rally last year. So that car's reasonably
exactly,
well sorted.
Exactly. The car is super for this. In reality, he's in a fantastic position on the road. Is he fifth on the road, fourth on the road? Because he's probably fourth on the road. That's a good position.
Fourth, yeah.
Good position for the road. Probably just about ideal. And I think he's got a great chance to again, you know, maybe position overall, he might still end up, you know, being fifth overall, but I would expect the gap to be closer to the top guys. And it could be, and he could very, very well shine. Not that I'm trying to curse him, commentators curse and all that, but I like to see the young guys coming through. As everyone that listens to these podcasts know, I'm quite keen on seeing these young drivers come through and succeed. You know, for everyone that tries, there's 99 fail. Just due to maybe either ability or starstruck or just the opportunity dries up. So great to see him there, and I think he's got a great chance to do one of two things: either really shine or cement his progress through the championship with another solid result.
Is this a good time to talk about Tanak?
Ooh, yeah, great.
Last year's winner.
Great road position, and who would bet against him? He was commenting that, well, obviously they had the difficulty with the car in Monte Carlo, which it seemed to some extent that all the drivers had, but Ott was the one that seemed to struggle most. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was certainly the most vocal about it. But Ott, as we know, is very capable of compartmenting away any issues, and he will get the very best out of whatever he's driving. He might still tell you it's as awful as he does it, but at least he's telling us about it. You know, he's open. We shouldn't be complaining, and I don't want it to sound like I am. I would imagine he, for me, is the dark horse on the event with the best chance of winning. And given that the car is enough to his liking, his road position on day one should give him the leg up that he might need, especially looking at the conditions. Yeah, I'd put Ott down as my favourite on this rally to win.
James?
I think he's going to be very strong. And, you know,
yeah.
He's a defending winner. He's won in Sweden a couple of times. He also won Arctic Rally Finland when that was a WRC round. So he's a master on this surface. That Hyundai has been very quick in Sweden, so he's certainly got all the factors lining up, and you wouldn't bet against it. But I don't think he's the favourite, George. I think the favourite has got to be Calle Rovanperä.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, maybe I'll recant. I was just about to say that after I said all that, I'm thinking championship, of course. And we've got Calle interloping this year. And this is such an interesting factor. But, you know, he's going to... I'm not quite sure how they've done the seeding yet. I've not got a seeded entry list here. I've just got the entry list. So what I'm imagining, it should be Thierry, Elfin. Then it would be... Who would it be? It would be Ott.
Ott third. Next.
Ott, and then Adrian, and then Callie. Yes. Callie will be down. Did Gregoire Munster get any points? No, I don't think he did. Did he?
Yes, he did. He picked up one.
No, he did.
Okay,
yeah.
So Callie's running after Gregoire Munster in the seeded sense. However, the stewards. And FIA, I think there's some regulations that they can play with regarding seeding to put Calle in a slightly different place. But they're not going to put him where he should be, you know, which is like one or two in reality. That's where he should be. And that would horribly handicap him as well. I'm sure the regulations won't be taken to that extent. But that's the sort of thing that we should be looking at. You know, if Calle was doing Monte Carlo, I would guess that he would have finished in the top three, maybe four, yeah. So I would slot him in. If I was a steward and I was being asked to seed Calle, I would certainly put him in at three or four, based on the fact he's already world champion, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean...
Interesting.
That leads to a different discussion, of course. Apologies.
It does. I'm going to move this on to WRC2, actually. WRC2... It was such a great competition last year. It was a support championship, but at times it was really propping up the WRC, I felt, at times. I love watching these cars go over the snow, James.
Yeah, so do I, Lisa. We've got 25 cars in total, Rally 2 cars in Sweden, so massive entry, 5 manufacturers represented. 13 of those are Skodas, mind you. And the chief among those is Oliver Solberg, as you've mentioned. He's the defending winner. But then Toyota's GR Yaris Rally 2, this is where that car's really going to get started. It's had its first win now on Arctic Lapland Rally in the hands of Mikko Haikala. Apologies for pronunciation. he's entered into this rally as well, but Sami Pihari is really the man who I think Toyota's hopes are going to be on. Sami drove that car all the way through Monte. It wasn't really to his liking, and he wasn't particularly experienced on that rally, but this is where he's going to shine, and he's beginning his WRC2 campaign on this rally. So 20 WRC2 point scorers on Sweden, and most of those guys, this is their season opener. This is the first point scoring round for those. So you've got that tricky situation where they want to get a good result to get their season started, but also they've been waiting so long to get behind the wheel, and you know, will they go all out for the win or are they going to throttle back a bit and make sure they get some points on the board? So I think it'll be a good battle between Pihari and Solberg. For me, those are the two favourites. Also got a Fiesta in the field. Will Crichton, who's the defending or the reigning junior world champion, he's starting his full campaign with a Fiesta. So good to see a well-sorted, updated Fiesta back in the Rally 2 field.
Nice pictures on social media as well from him. Doing a big love to M Sport and the MLA Rally Academy, helping him get to Sweden.
Has William got much experience in Sweden? He must have done Sweden last year, didn't he? At least
he's done it a few years in JWRC.
He's another seasons. One that, you know, he's junior world champion. That's pretty serious stuff, in my view. We should see him, you know, nibbling up at the leading edge at that. You know, maybe not on the same second per kilometre as the very leading guys, but we should see him, you know, through the rally get within a second a kilometre, maybe even half a second a kilometre of those top guys. That would be a brilliant progression for William to see that. So a great chance. And, you know, we can talk about lots of guys all the way through. Of course, we've got the two Toyota juniors, effectively, the next Japanese drivers that might get the opportunity in a WRC car on that little academy. Yeah. So they're both in GR Yaris's.
So that's Yamamoto Yuki and Kaguri Hikaru.
Yes, it is. It's the other way around, I think, actually. Yeah.
Well, I'm doing it the proper way, actually. I think you'll find, and this is something that actually has been requested both by the Chinese and the Japanese, that people start actually referring to people by the correct way.
The last name first?
Yes.
But no, so it is super interesting there, and the battle at the front, I could easily see that going six ways, you know, six, seven drivers all battling near the front. There's a fantastic array of young drivers there that will push and shove. And yes, we will see retirements from that, and yes, there'll be tragedies of lost points, but it's going to be incredible. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, six, eight drivers maybe capable of that top end speed. And
this is something that's really exciting about WRC2 this year as well. Is in the past few years, you've had Andreas Mikkelsen there, who's an experienced guy. He's got wins at the top level of WRC, and he's always been the guy to beat in that category. Now he's got his move back into Rally 1. The Rally 2 field is really a field of young drivers. It's a proper young drivers' championship. There aren't many kind of guys who have kind of been to the top level and then come back down to the second level. And I think that also makes it really exciting, because you're really seeing who the next generation are at the top of the WRC2 field.
It's going to be amazing. It will be absolutely brilliant. We've got, of course, there's also the, the FIA Rally Stars are here. Another fantastic, one.
In JWRC, yeah. So
JWRC is always exciting.
It is, and a record entry, George. 19 cars entered for the full season, and 16 different nationalities within that field. So a proper international championship.
Yeah.
And I think what always makes it exciting is because they are all driving the same car, the Fiesta Rally 3, the Ford Fiesta Rally 3. I think even though we have, it's obviously running alongside WRC2 and WRC, it's almost like a completely different championship in style as well. I love the fact that the car is kind of secondary to the talents of the driver in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, and what? But we should talk about the car
And co-driver.
The car and co-driver. The those little cars around. I think they're around about the 200 horsepower, maybe 210 horsepower. Four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
They're basically like driving a super miniature World Rally car, or a miniature WRC 2 car. But they are superb to drive. And I mean, the first time I saw them in action was in Kenya a couple of years ago, and I was absolutely amazed by them. And I've talked to Malcolm about these directly on a couple of occasions, just on very short conversations, saying I would love to try one out and just see what it's like, because I think they're absolutely brilliant. And Malcolm said, phone up and you can do it. Of course, what he means is I can rent one. I was trying to pull the Dirtfish journalist angle, but he wasn't having any of it at all.
Let's get that checkbook out, George.
Get that checkbook out. But no, these cars, I'm not advertising for them. Those cars are absolutely brilliant, and they seem to be fantastic to drive. And you know, talking of seeing them brilliant, you know, there's a few of those in the USA doing the championship, and they're getting great results out there as well. Obviously nothing like as fast as the WRC2 car or the open class that we have there, but they are amazing and great chassis, and they seem to be brilliant fun to drive. Absolutely, they're getting the very best out of drivers. So it's a car you can go into and shine in if you've got the talent and the bravery. I think it works really, really well.
Who's going to be shining this weekend, do you think, James?
Well, this is a difficult one to call. So we've got kind of lots of different groups of drivers in JWRC this year. You've got guys who are returning for their second or third year in the category. So Diego Dominguez Jr., he was second last year, and he's back to try and win that championship, so he's going to be tough to beat. But then you've got this kind of other category of guys who are moving up from junior level in the European Championship. Norbert Meyer is the junior champion in ERC, he's moving up. You've also got a lot of junior champions from national competition. Then you've got the FIA Rallystar graduates. So these are guys who 2 years ago were sitting on their sofa playing video games. They won the competition to join the Rallystar program, and they've been through an extensive training program, national level rallying, lots of one-to-one coaching, and they're finally at the WRC level. I mean, how amazing is that to go in less than 2 years from sitting on your sofa to competing in the WRC?
And we also have a famous son there. Fabio Schwartz is the son of Armin Schwartz. He's in the JWRC. Be interested to see how he gets on. Of course, Armin runs a driving experience. I don't know if it's in the north of Sweden or the north of Finland. I'm not quite sure where he runs that, but he's been running that for a number of years. So young Fabio should be extremely experienced in driving on ice and snow. So this should just fall into his lap. A great chance to show well in a very accomplished field. I mean, all of these guys that are driving in that, all of them, I mean, pretty well right down through the field, they would all be running at the top end of their own national fields, you imagine. There might be one or two interlopers in there, and they're very, very welcome, because what a place to learn. You go into somewhere and you're a championship that's got such a fantastic level, in my view. It just lifts your driving. So you go and do the first stage and you find yourself 2.5 seconds a kilometre slower than the guy in front. What? The next stage, guess what? You're only a second and a half, because you have just thrown caution to the wind and you've lifted yourself and realised that, you know, these guys are taking a lot more out of the car than you are. So wake up. And that's the way to learn. So this whole environment, that whole entry field from WRC2 down, these are guys are all striving to be the fastest. So that is a field that is just filled with talent and filled with expectation, and maybe a smidgen of desperation in there as well. I've got to show it this year, you know. And there's nothing more interesting, or in fact sometimes sadder to watch than that, from the inside. But then you see guys there with some very experienced co-drivers in there. Stephen McCauley co-driving for James Leckie at the tail end of WRC2. Sorry, he's the last car on the entry list. I don't know whether he'll be the last car on the seeded list, But, you know, I presume he's going to Sweden for the first time, James Leckie, and he'll be making the exploratory journey. But he's got a great experienced co-driver with him in Stephen. So it'll be super interesting, really. And through all the nationalities and all the classes there, it's just going to be fantastic. Absolutely amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the runners and riders, but let's just circle back. James, what's new? What are you expecting to be the highlights route-wise for Rally Sweden this year?
Well, it's largely the same route as last year, Lisa. There's one entirely new stage, which is the first stage of Saturday, that's then repeated again on Saturday afternoon. So don't ask me how to pronounce it, but it's a 10-mile-odd stage, which looks like... So most of the stages are pretty fast, pretty flat out, fast corners. You know, it's a question of commitment through those corners and ultimate top speed. But this, I think it's pronounced Vanus. Yes. So this is one of the more technical stages. So it's a little bit different. Obviously, the guys will get a good look at it during the recce, but that's the only brand new stage. There's a couple of new sections of road on some of the stages, but by and large, it's the same route as last year. Great thing that's been done by the organisers is the Bratby test, which we all remember last year for Craig Breen and his legendary stage end commentary, and he won both runs of Bratby last year. So the organisers have renamed that stage in his honour. So it's now known as the number 42 Bratby test. So
fantastic.
That's brilliant. And the organisers have also told me there's going to be some other Craig Breen tributes throughout the weekend. So that'll be brilliant to look out for. Great thing that they're doing there. In terms of roads, like I said, very fast, lots of commitment required. We're going to be seeing top speeds of sort of 200 kilometers an hour, which is about 120 miles an hour. Two or three night stages at the end of the day. A good mix of everything. It's a fantastic place to watch rally cars if you're stage side or if you're at home watching on television. So yeah, that's really how the route is going to go. Lots to look forward to.
Cannot wait. It is going to be amazing. Keep up to date with everything. Dirtfish.com. We've got the Live Centre, and James is going to be a busy, busy man. Lots and lots of writing for you. And just remember, if you're going outside anywhere, James, that has battery power, make sure you keep it inside, because the batteries will go flat just like that.
Okay, okay. I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes, Lisa. I don't know any of this.
Yeah, we found that the year I was out there, and we had our remote kit, basically, as soon as you took it outside of your suit to start recording, you had about 5 minutes before the batteries just were, the cold leached all life out of them. I mentioned the website, dirtfish.com, obviously. It's where everybody goes first thing in the morning to check what's happening. What is coming up on the website? What have we got coming up, James?
Well, we'll have lots of, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, we'll have lots of preview material. And that's where you'll be able to find our form guide and our, all of our preview stuff. Lots of little features coming up. And then, of course, over the weekend, we'll have, if you miss anything from the rally, we'll have all of the stage reports and the wrap up of everything that's happened. But, you know, where you really want to be across the weekend is on Dirtfish Live Centre, because that's where we'll have all of the live coverage of the stages. We'll have behind the scenes content, stuff you won't see anywhere else from myself and Colin Clark on the ground. So that's the best place to follow the rally. And of course, on the YouTube channel as well, we'll have a daily highlights package and lots of other interesting stuff going on. So we've really got it covered on Dirtfish. So that's the place to keep up to date with Rally Sweden.
And I can guarantee as well that James is going to have very little sleep, because it's going to be a busy weekend for you with all of that to cover over there. And you're going to be kept very, very busy by the Dirtfish team. Dirtfish.com will be where you can keep up with everything that's happening. The Life Centre will bring you the action as it's happening on the stages. James is going to be writing lots and lots and lots. And lots. He's going to be so busy.
Yeah.
This is probably a good chance for us to just jump across to the States, dirtfish.com. Obviously, we're based in Snoqualmie, Washington State, but the ARA is underway. Snowdrift Rally at the weekend. Distinct lack of snow, I'm afraid, for that. So we sent David and Colin stateside to catch up with all the action in Michigan, but we couldn't trust them to do it on their own. Take it away, Brenton Kelly.
Welcome to Michigan. We're currently sitting in my hometown of Alpena, Michigan right now. We just kind of ventured over from Atlanta after Snowdrift. I'm sitting here with David Evans and Colin Clark. I'm Brenton
Kelly.
I'm
glad you said me first. It's an order of importance, I call. And as well, it's worth saying...
It's an order of ego.
Yeah,
obviously. Not importance. It's ego.
But it's important...
I have to say... You've been the perfect host this week. You really
have. Certainly have.
It's been wonderful. You've looked after us well, and it's a delight to come to your stomping ground.
Yeah.
You know, from your youth, and to discover where the young BK used to spend his time.
Worked
while away
in the
hours.
Theatre across the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to live across there, live above the building we're in right now.
It's a great place. What a great, great place.
It is fabulous.
It's a voyage of discovery. Well done, BK. Thank you.
Yeah, and we've met the family.
BK
Senior.
Good. David. And who didn't have a coat yesterday? And BK Senior.
Yeah,
being the typically embracing and hospitable American, offered me a coat. And what did you say?
Yeah, but I said no, because I thought he was going to take the coat off. I thought your dad was going to give him the coat of his own bag.
He would have.
Yeah, but that's
exactly
wrong.
Exactly,
BK. And Colin would have accepted it.
I think me and BK's dad are of a similar age. So, you know.
But no, it's, I mean, fantastic part of the world.
Yeah.
Second time in Michigan, 4 months on from being a Yooper. Up in the Upper Peninsula, we're now trolls.
We're trolls. Do you want to explain that?
Just for a little bit of perspective, we're about 6 to 7 hours away from Marquette, where we were at LSPR. It is technically still the same state, but it is the peninsula. So it's a whole different section connected by that Mackinac Bridge like we talked to LSPR. Hmm. I believe the longest suspension bridge in all of the Northern Hemisphere, if I had to guess.
Don't guess.
I'm pretty sure
it is. What about that one that goes from... Copenhagen.
But is it a suspension bridge? BK said it's the longest suspension bridge.
I did say Northern Hemisphere too. Maybe North America. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Narrow so it down a little
it's
bit.
It's the
more.
Biggest in Michigan.
Yeah, it's the biggest bridge in Michigan.
So how long would it take us if we left where we are now, which is essentially Atlanta, Michigan, and drove to Marquette?
About 6 to 7 hours.
Sorry, you said that. I mean, how many miles?
Oh, miles? 6 or 7 hours worth of miles, I'm not sure.
Depends on the speed you're going.
Got to be 350 miles, I guess. 300, 350. A bit more, 400.
Once you start to get into the UP, the speed limits are a little bit slower. A couple of cities you got to go through because you're not on a divided highway. That's something to think about. In the UP, there's no real two-lane
highway
section.
What we call a motorway.
Don't get into that argument again about two tracks and single tracks and all the rest. But because it's a real hotbed of rallying kind of... communities around here, isn't it? Because you've got this one, Ojibwe's not too far away, LSPR, you know, this area.
Get you, Mr. Geography Man. Geography's my department. I have no idea where's Ojibwe.
Joint honours degree.
Ask a lot of questions. So basically, I mean, in the US, we got the Pacific Northwest pocket of rally, we got the Midwest pocket of rally, and there's that East Coast, and now we're starting to get a little bit more of the southern stuff with the Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, that's starting to come back a little bit. But yeah, the Midwest is kind of a real, real big hotbed. You know, we got Snowdrift, LSPR, we got a couple other smaller rallies like Iron Mule, Magnum Opus in Michigan as well. And then Ojibwe is not too far away, which you can just kind of go through the UP to get to. 100 Acres not far away. Southern Ohio is probably only 6 hours from here. And I mean, just geographically for you guys, it's a very long distance to go 6 hours for a rally, right? If you're driving it, right?
Yeah.
But here, this is, I mean, the optimal location to be is kind of central Midwest. You can get to all these rallies within a 10-hour tow, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And what a great rally it was. We came here desperate. I genuinely, probably 15, 20 years, I've been watching since reporting on David Higgins winning and for all of those years. I've always wanted to come to Snowdrift, always, and always wanted to come to Michigan, you know, Detroit. Yeah. Motown, Colin. Motown. Where's Motown?
But David, I was slightly validated in my misconception of Motown by BK, who said he also thought that Motown was a place.
It took me a while.
Motown is definitely not a place.
Not a place.
It's a
looked it up on Google Maps. Going, David, where is this Motown?
I mean, it's a place, but it's a slang.
Yeah.
Slang, you know.
From Motortown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you were trying to out-talk the coffee machine there. I could hear your volume going up and up and up. The coffee machine behind you, you were trying to over-talk it.
No chance of doing that. But so amazing, you know, almost a sort of pilgrimage for me to come here. And Bonfire Alley, you know, we've done stuff about that on Dirtfish before, the whole place and the atmosphere and everything that goes on there. But to come here was incredible. Huge disappointment with no snow, but ultimately it's been an epic event with or without snow.
I mean, it definitely made it more entertaining for the fans and for you guys too, especially on that Bonfire Alley hairpin. You know, it's like usually it's such a slow corner, and it's just the excitement is maybe a car went a little bit wide and tapped a bank, but now you're actually seeing hucking it in there, big pendulums,
throwing it in,
handbrake. Yeah.
Travis threw that last night.
Threw it in.
Was nuts. You know, the mid corner speed, you were sure he was going off.
Yeah.
Backwards somewhere.
And he did smack the bank, didn't he?
He did.
Pinned him back on again.
But it just kept it pinned. It was the whole thing has been an absolute treat. And
I have to say, Bonfire Alley for me was the highlight. And we'd driven through there. We'd already driven the stage. We'd talked about it endlessly all weekend. And I'm thinking, a few little fires, and you know, maybe a few little rowdy spectators. I could not believe it. As we turned off the highway, we're 3 miles, 4.5 kilometres from the stage, and the cars were lined up all the way in. You know, and then there's another access road, and there's another 3 or 4 miles of cars.
Right.
And we got there, and it was. You know, I've been going to stage ends and rallies for 20-odd years, and I have never, ever experienced anything like that. It was just, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible.
I think it was the
incredible.
Intensity as well.
The intensity of it, yeah.
You know, we talked a lot about when you go up in El Condor in Argentina, you get a similar kind of vibe, don't you? That there is that, there's the fires and the camping and the people making incredible smelling food and what have you, but they're so spaced out.
Yeah.
Whereas... Yeah. And in some ways, in every sense.
There was a bit of that last night.
There was a wee bit. But here, you know, it's so narrow between kind of the stage side. And it was fantastic. But, you know, for me as well, to see Travis Pastrana back, and you kind of forget, you know, Seminook, in my world, you know, mountain bike world is massive. And sometimes, you know, I still sort of pinch myself that there's Brandon Seminook. He's such a big thing.
Yeah.
A big kind of dude in our house. But he's not that megastar. He's not the rock star kind of guy.
Not at all.
Travis walks into town, and there is the rock star.
He was just gone
11 o'clock last night, sat in the freezing cold, just chatting to people, and a huge long line of people.
And they were very respectful, weren't they? They always queued. They queued, and they queued quietly and patiently, and Travis was fantastic with them. But it was interesting because, you know, we had no issues getting hold of Brandon to do the interview. And we're chatting to him. There were one or two people around and that was it. But you couldn't see Travis for all the fans that were there. But, you know, I kind of thought, how must that make Brandon feel? Because he's just won this rally by quite considerable margin. And it wasn't just that. It was the whole style of his driving. He said to us before the event, you know, whenever I've been here before against Travis, Travis has had the upper hand, you know, so we'll have to see where I've progressed to. Well, my goodness me, in 2 years, he has massively progressed. He's won the rally, and he was quite obscure at the end of the rally. And I thought, will that bother him? No, not in the slightest. I think he's enjoying the fact that he's got someone to compete against, someone to measure himself against.
And in some ways, someone to take away some of that demand from the fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Because, you know, Brandon's kind of way is just to step back a little bit. He's a quieter character. But, I mean, the bell. Carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you know, you got to really think about Travis's history here. You know, he said that guy came up with the magazine to get him signed from his first rally here. And this was, we found out, Travis's first ever official rally. It's just interesting to see. That was 20 years ago. You got a lot of people that have collected car parts from, you know, Travis is going off, hitting the bumpers. He always goes through a ton of bumpers here, and you always see people carrying, you know, even if it's a small chunk of the bumper, maybe the fog light cover or something, they want to get that sign. Right. And I saw a lot of those people bringing those same parts back from when he did this rally 12 years ago, getting them signed. They want to get another photo with him. So people that have already interacted with him once and years ago, they're coming to the rally. They want to see him again and get that updated version of who Travis is now.
Yeah,
he's great. He is just great for rallying. Never mind American rallying. He's just great for rallying. He's clearly got character. He's got presence. He's got almost rock star like presence. Travis Pastrana. And you know, while he's here, we need to make the most of him, don't we?
Totally. It was the same with Ken.
Yeah.
You know, you totally saw that different style and different character. But, it, you know, for
and
me...
he's a bloody good driver.
Well, exactly. Absolutely he is. But, and, you know, there were some issues with getting back into the car. And one thing that actually we didn't really explore enormously with him, which perhaps we should have done, was actually driving the car and actually being in the car. You know, talking to Keaton Williams, to Brandon's co-driver, he was saying, you know, it's a new car. And, mm-hmm. and Travis stepped into that on Wednesday. And it's the same as us. You know, you go and buy a new car, you don't immediately know how to move the screen from one thing to the other.
Absolutely.
All of that was new. They've got, I think it's a Cosworth system they're running in there now, which is different. Mm-hmm. And, you know what you and I like when we get a rental car and we're trying to fit Apple CarPlay. Fortunately, on WRC, as we've got Elliot with us.
It took us 5 minutes to actually work out how to move it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that was him, wasn't it, on Wednesday morning?
No, he was in France. It didn't take, it took us 10 minutes, genuinely 10 minutes to work out how to turn this car off. And we walked away about four times going, yeah, that's job done. And then realising, no, it's not turned off.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Something we kind of grazed over, though, was that Travis just got out of surgery. You know, mentioned it at the test. It didn't really come up at all during the whole rally, was that he had that knee surgery like a week ago or something.
You could see he was struggling, couldn't you? You could really see that he was struggling. He was, last night, I guess he probably just wanted to go to bed and take some painkillers. Yeah. But no, there was no suggestion that he was going to bail out, was there?
No.
Top man.
No,
top
absolutely. Man. And, you know, looking further, so... incredible. I mean, a peerless driver again from Seminup. 10th ARA win on the bounce. And you've got to say, you know, the way that he drove the power stage, the last stage, took 6 seconds or something out of everybody again. And it's hard to look past him for the championship. But to have Travis there, it is going to raise his game. Because suddenly, with the best will in the world, you know, there was not really anybody last year. Okay. Barry McKenna came along and ran him close a couple of times, but there wasn't anybody consistently. So it's good for the championship.
Absolutely.
But also, you look back, you look further down the field into third, you know, Javier Olivares, brilliant result for him. His fourth podium
in a row.
In a Rally 3 car.
In a row, fourth in a row in a Rally 3 car. Consistency, and that's in some ways very similar in his approach to Brandon. He's maybe not quite got the pace or the... I suppose see the ability. It's difficult to judge that right now, but very similar in their approach. They're very methodical, very reliable. Mm-hmm. They know what their cars are capable of, both Javier and Brandon, and they bring their car to the end of every stage. And you know, when you're competing against a driver that's like that, it's difficult because you've got to push yourself.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Travis. Travis pushing it. He thought, I've got this. I'm going to push a little bit harder, and he puts it off.
Yeah.
And Javier is the same. He just is like... you know, just the consistency of his performances really impressing me. Really, really impressing me.
No, he's definitely. And
Javi, by the way.
Javi, sorry. And beyond that, you're looking down into the regional event with that incredible battle between John Farrett and Taylor.
I'm not sure
how to say it.
The Dutch name. Amazing. You know, Taylor's first ever gravel rally that he didn't intend to compete on a gravel rally, but it's how it evolved. And John Farrett, you know, an alumni from Dirtfish.
With his brother next to him.
Just great stories. And then your man, Mike Cessna, in the BMW, changed the engine.
Yeah.
Finished changing the engine like hours before the start, having worked all night. And this, you know, this is American Rally. I don't think people get this, you know, the stories that come out of the place. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, these are guys that are working full-time jobs.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking, and we know how very few holidays Americans get as in your annual leave. They're using all their annual leave to come out and do these rallies. And do you know what? Once they've made the effort, they've committed to it, they are going to make sure they get there.
Yeah.
And it was some job, wasn't it, from those boys to replace that engine? And what else happened? They replaced the engine and then something else just literally hours beforehand that they had to replace on it.
So I asked him, you know, how did you end up having a blown motor coming into the rally? And he said, I went to change the oil for the year. You know, and that's just a little perspective in North American Rally is a lot of these people, you're not spending that extra money to get the oil. If the oil's slick, you're good to go, you know. The motor sometimes is cheaper than trying to upkeep oil changes every single event. So he went to change the oil, saw some metal on the magnet, and then said, okay, we'll get another motor, we'll change it at the event. Changed the motor out the night before the event, went to go start it, and realized they'd forgot the pilot bearing, which basically is just a little bearing that presses into the motor portion. and then kind of the shaft out of the transmission just kind of slips right into that. Yeah. I mean, it's no bigger than a marble or a gumball, you know, yeah. It's just a small little piece. Incredible. But there's no bolts or anything. You just push it in with your finger.
And you have to take...
You got to take the transmission basically fully all the way out to be able to put that in there.
Wow.
So they got that completely done.
And that's the sort of thing you and I do.
We've done it 5 minutes, Dave. But what I loved, I mean, you know, the boys told us a story about how they'd, I think he said he'd lost the summer snowdrift by 4 seconds or something, yeah. Didn't he? And there were tears, and you could see the emotion, yeah. And I love it. We've seen it a number of times here. It just reminds you of how much rallying means to so many people.
Yeah.
You know, driver and co-driver. It was an enormous result for them, and they said there were tears in the car, I'm sure, at the final stop line, but there were tears when we were talking to them. It was.
Yeah.
It's very humbling to see people that are so committed to what they do,
and
they work so hard.
And put so much everything into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what about, you finished on the podium on this event.
Yeah, in 2016.
What's it
and
like?
You won one.
I've won the summer snowdrift twice, the first 2 years they've done it.
Yes.
When I was running the regionals here, I got...
But that's not the problem.
Yeah.
Let's not let him get too big for his boots.
Yeah, I got a couple of regional wins here as well. But nationally, 2016, I took third.
But what was it like, you know, doing what you did with media, with Dirtfish Live Centre? How did it compare? Was it quite nice to see it completely from the opposite side?
Honestly, the biggest thing was obviously Bonfire Alley. You know, I've spectated some stages here before growing up, but never officially made it out to Bonfire Alley and had that commitment. You know, when I was coming up here younger, learning rally, you wouldn't come up here with maps and an organization. We'd show up with a bunch of kids and we'd find a rally car on the road and we'd follow to a stage and maybe see a start. And then we go to the super special. And that was really all we got. So coming here to actually do coverage and be organized and see the commitment of all these people on Bonfire Alley is epic. And as we found out, if you want to get that prime spot at Bonfire Alley, you've got to be there at 9
o'clock.
Right?
9 o'clock, yeah.
Almost, I mean, 10 hours or so. Yeah. So 8 hours before it starts.
We saw them when we drove through on recce on Wednesday, was it Thursday? Thursday. And the locals who had properties on Bonfire Alley already building their bonfires on Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, it was incredible.
Trucks of wood.
Yeah. No, it was incredible. And, you know, you'd sold us this incredible snowy dream. All through last year, and we arrived at, but what for you, how different was it? You know, you've never seen roads like this in the winter.
Yeah, you know, it was super interesting to see the ice and the slush combo that was, you know, not like it looked like mud, but there's 2-3 inches of ice underneath that in some of those spots where those roads hadn't been plowed. So, I mean, that's a surface I've never seen before in a rally, and I don't think many people had seen at all. So everyone was kind of concerned at what was the tire choice. We saw so many weird, interesting combos of tires and stuff.
So many weird cuts as well.
Yeah, very weird cuts.
Which is great, you know, back to the old days of cutting tires.
What were those enormous tires that we saw in that car with the very strange treads on them?
I can't remember.
They bought from Indonesia or somewhere.
And they looked like a pickup truck or something.
Pickup truck. They looked like tractor tires. And the boys came to us at the end with a huge beaming smile on his face going, I told you they'd work. And he had the best rally he's ever had.
Yeah.
On steel rims. He said, you know, didn't worry about battering the rims because they were steel rims.
I mean, that's kind of one of the things you got to think about for this rally in particular, too, is... Just to get a proper set of ice tires is not cheap. That's the price of a motor for a lot of these cars, you know? Yeah. So a lot of these guys will, sometimes I've heard people swapping the cars off their, or the tires off their recce car onto their rally car to do the event, and then swapping them back onto their car to drive home.
Wow. So you would just use one set of tires across the 2 days?
Yeah, typically, I mean, you're not getting any tire wear here. Like, you put a new set of snows on, and you can see if you're not getting down to that gravel at all, those ice tires will last you all event. I've probably ran 3-4 years in a row with the same set of ice tires because they didn't wear. You put them back in the garage, but that's just, you know, it's expensive to get a new set of those ice tires like that.
So what was your takeaway? What was the highlight for BK from the 2 days?
Again, it's
apart from having Cole Knight in your backyard.
Yeah, it was quite some enjoyment.
I got to say Bonfire Alley still, just getting out there and it, being able to experience it and see it. Obviously, with a media vest, too, gives you a little more availability to wander around and kind of get around some of those fences to see the crowds from a different perspective than what everyone else is seeing. You know, we saw those fences as we were doing recce, and it's like they told us they added 200 yards of fence on each side compared to what they did last year. And you guys were even kind of skeptical, like, oh, yeah, you know, might be a couple people trying to hang out. But you guys...
Oh, it just blew you away. It was insane to see, you know, when everybody poured the lighter fuel or whatever onto the fires, the whole forest just went bright orange.
Yeah.
It was bonkers. And to think, we were talking to Brandon, to Seminook after the finish, and said, you know, what did you think? And he was like, yeah, it was good, but he said, you know, maybe last year with the snow on the ground, it reflects it and it makes the whole thing brighter. So you think, actually, we didn't even see it at its best. Wow. So we have to come back next year.
You know, it was just the number of people in the atmosphere. Yeah. The number of people, I just, you know, it was as busy. Certainly those approach roads were as busy as anything I've seen for any stage anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just incredible. It was just such a wonderful atmosphere. And people being, you know, they were being loud, they were being raucous, they were dancing, some of them were sleeping. But it was fun. It was a great atmosphere.
Some of them were falling out of trees.
Yeah, some of them fell out of the tree. We think she's all right, we understand. I think she bounced when she landed, but anyway.
But no, it was great. It's been a proper special event, special weekend.
Yeah.
Totally lived up to the expectations. And
one thing I want to touch on, just what Brandon was saying about, you know, the snow reflecting.
Yeah.
I kind of was pointing out as we were going to some of those stages, and I wrote about it on Live Center a little bit, is typically here at this rally, when there's snow on the trees, it is quiet in the woods.
Yeah.
You can't hear anything. And then all of a sudden, you just start to see headlights hitting the tops of the trees.
Yeah.
And you see headlights, you know, a couple times. Then all of a sudden, then you start to hear that sound. And that was something a little bit different here, that we could hear the cars before we could see them. But typically, it's you see those lights a couple times hit the tops of the trees, then all of a sudden they just come over the hill and you got the full sound. But without that snow dampening it, it was a little more normal. But that is one of the vibes that I think you guys really got to come back and see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'd recommend anyone does, to be honest with you. It's one of those experiences. If you're a rally fan, you want to experience that. You absolutely want to experience
it.
It was special.
Yeah, it absolutely wasn't. You'd say that for every ARA round that we've been to. There's all, you know, every place. It's a voyage of discovery for us, isn't it? Because we haven't been to these places. For you, it's a little bit more humdrum because you've been there. But for us, it's fantastic to come here and see this. And
the last stage at LSBR up on the hill.
Yeah,
huge crowds up there as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it is fantastic. So another great weekend, and it's far too long till 100 Acre Wood, where we'll be seeing you next.
Yeah, me next.
Yeah.
You guys are off. I mean, you guys are, what, one day home?
No Sweden for me. Colin,
no
Sweden.
I'm home for 14 hours and then off to Sweden.
Yeah.
Where there is some proper snow.
Yeah.
And it's going to snow all week. A metre of snow is being forecast.
Snow's overrated now.
It's overrated.
Snow's overrated. Yeah, last year.
Snow was last year. Last decade.
No, it's great. And just a stunning start to the season, you know, an incredible Monty, fantastic win for Thierry Neuville, and just to come here, and Dakar as well for Carlos, you know, what a start we've had.
Great stories, great stories
absolutely,
already.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's stay tuned to dirtfish.com for all of the news and more of these great stories. Sorry, Beacon, that was you're supposed to do.
He keeps doing that to me as well, Beacon.
Sorry.
It's your sign
I'll
off.
Take we're a sip of my coffee and you sign us out.
There's a little bit of that happening on the interviews too, wasn't there?
Exactly.
Right.
I've kind of got used to that. Yeah. I go, brothers in arms, me and BK.
I got to the point where I just started putting the mic to David at the end of the interview. But again,
wrap it up.
Like David said, stay tuned. All the action, all the news on dirtfish.com.
That was nicely done, Brenton, keeping those two in check. The deadly duo will have a little more luck finding some of the white stuff as they head to Sweden for dirtfish.com and the second round of the World Rally Championship. Colin and David making their way across the continents to get in position in Umeå as soon as possible, which George and James, I think, just leaves us to indulge in the ritual humiliation that is predicting the top three for Sweden. And I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say Kalle Rovanperä is going to win. surely it's going to be Kalle Rovanperä. He's going to be chomping at the bit to get back into WRC action. And I can't see past him unless Oit Tanak gets a repeat. But will he? No, I don't think he will. I think it's going to be, for me, Rovanperä, Tanak, Evans.
Okay.
I'm always wrong. But, George?
No comment. I'm not going to get away with that, am I?
No.
Well, I'm
absolutely
gonna,
not.
I'm going to stick with my Oit Tanak on this one, because I think Oit is going to be extremely determined and his road position is going to help. Obviously, Callie's in exactly the same position, so I think there'll be just in terms of pure pace and road position, Callie should be leading, Oit should be second, and then it's a choice between, you know, you've got a very determined Esa Pekka, I'm sure, as well. A Takamoto Katsuta, who will be, you know, very keen to get into these conditions. This is kind of home turf for him as well. He's very familiar with this and will be expecting to really perform up to another level. So, you know, I think it's just down to road conditions and how the feel is on the day. And don't discount, I'm going to say, poor Elfyn Evans, you know, who seems to, you know, be very self-effacing and always puts his life on the line in terms of, you know, how he feels about the car and what the performance is, and I'm not quite feeling right in the car. Actually, Elfyn, nobody's really interested in that. We just want to see you going fast, mate. It's as simple as that. And you do your best, and you know, four or five times a year you're going to win rallies, and that's just how it is. And you know, that's your driving style, and it's brilliant. You know, this he's won here before. Don't forget that. What hazards are there in this rally? Well, if it ruts badly, as we mentioned earlier, if it's just been cold and we don't have a strong frozen base, you can get ruts. So there is jeopardy. You can get stones through sumps. That does happen. The deep ruts can fling a car off the road very easily because you lean on the ruts and you can pop out of them, like a train coming off a rail. Really, it's very very hard to get back into it and recover. So there's enough jeopardy there, I think, to swing an unusual rally result. So predicting very, very hard. I'll say that the top three places will be taken by WRC1 cars. That's my prediction.
George!
That's my prediction.
That's outrageous.
I realise it's outrageous. Somewhere between Autumn and
give us a name.
Cali. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can't look past Cali. I'd love to throw in a wild card pick, but I just can't for this one. I think Cali's going to win it. I think the guy that is going to be closest to him is Esa Pekka Lappi. That's my prediction, because his road position's excellent. He's always gone very well in fast rallies. He's hungry. He had a really difficult end to the season last year, and by my calculations, this is actually the first season since 2018 that he's been in the same car for the second consecutive year. He's changed teams so much. He's back in a Hyundai for the second year in a row now, so he should, in theory, be able to up his level of performance because he's more comfortable in that car. But what I think will happen over the weekend is we're going to see our old friend Team Orders come into play, because I don't think Esa Pekka Lappi will be allowed to finish second in this rally. So I think we'll see him on the pace, but drop back down later in the weekend.
That would only, of course, depend on Thierry Neuville being directly behind him.
Well, or Oit Tanak, George.
Assuming that. I was assuming that Oit was in front of him and Esa Pekka was going to be second on your prediction there. Apologies.
Yeah, so that would be interesting. If Lappi's ahead of both of them, will he be asked to drop back? So I think that's something we're going to have to look out for.
Well, that would solely depend on another Hyundai being directly behind them, in my view. But again, there's the strategy of the Saturday night point situation, where you've got to hold fire for the next day. Or could we be in a situation where Esa Pekka has to retire in order to give the right points to Thierry Neuville? That's not an impossibility, because the results are set for 18 points on Saturday night. If he's leading on Saturday night and he goes into Sunday, and Thierry and Oit are behind him, if he finishes the rally, he gets those 18 points. All he can do is slow down for the Sunday or retire. It's another interesting. That would be a counterpoint to the purpose of those regulations. But tactically, well, I imagine it must be a very, very narrow possibility of something like that happening. But I don't think anybody's really kind of worked those things out publicly. Although I can guarantee you that in Toyota and in Hyundai, they will have had somebody figure out every scenario imaginable. So, yeah, they'll be ready for it.
Dirtfish.com will be where you will find out all this information at the weekend. Rally Sweden, round two of the WRC Championship 2024. And I'm absolutely loving the tributes that they're going to be making to Craig Breen. We'll be covering that as well. What an amazing young man he was. And yeah, I think it's going to be quite an emotional weekend as well for many of us. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you, James. Thank you, George. Thank you remotely, David, Brenton and Colin. We will have plenty more content, but of course, just keep going to dirtfish.com and we will keep you right at the front of the field when it comes to rally information.